First of all, I want to say thanks for, you know, being here today. It really is a pleasure to be able to share essentially what has been testament to what I've seen in life, right? And this is, you know, to be clear, this is what I've seen. And maybe there are other people who have seen the same or have felt the same. And ultimately, that's what I want my poetry and my words to be, something that is that resonates for other people. And so the other thing I'll probably say is that a lot of what I've written was written even more. It's 2020 now, was written more than a decade ago. Like, I clearly, you know, remember writing a great deal of this prior to moving back to New York back in 2000. And actually, I take that back. I wrote a lot of this after my move to New York back in September 2001, and then spent a number of years not only writing poetry, but just being active in my community and, you know, and having opportunities to share my poetry on different poetry circuits around New York City. And it was really a blessing, but it was also really me just what I saw, what I believed, what I was present to, and having an outlet for those feelings. And probably what's most interesting about all of it is that, and here we are, you know, it's June 2020, and all those things I wrote in probably a 2-year span between, say, 2002 and maybe even 2005, maybe 3 years, it was like, it's still here. So I'll share. Schisms, melanin, and nights. The difference between black and white is more than just the genetic sequence of deoxyribonucleic acid, DNA. That is just a small facet of the fraction of the action that explains the melanin gelling in my veins that runs like trains through the system that is my spirit. So hear it when I say that color that I reside in is just a small portion of my distortion or disappointment with the facts and figures of why they call us niggas, and cause I'm bigger, I turn the other cheek and kick your ass instead. Cause to let you mess with my head is the equivalent of letting you mess with my life and all the stress and strife you causing with your gentrification population and your Applebee's enslavement got you thinking that's a statement when it's stalemate. Perhaps your date with destiny lies in the knife I hold at your throat to cut out and choke off your oxygen supply, cause you keep telling me lies about oil and war and the reason for liquor stores that only sell despair under the pretense of selling good times. So while I wait in a state of unrest, I undress your words and dissect them like cadavers on tables while you keep pouring out trying to tell me it's maple syrup with blurbs about humanity and justice, when really you just a shell of Lucifer and an agent for Babylon in the supposedly halcyon days we call life. I suppose if I rose from the ashes like the phoenix and blew your shit out into Kleenex, I could clean the world of your insinuation. Instead, I watch how your infiltration comes in like night and steals out like cash from the registers at ATMs, automatically taking my shit through my music, words, and style. And I can't understand why the hand that I'm dealt looks like twos and threes and your ass holding aces ready to flush me out. But I got a trick that measures greatly against your clout and pollution. It smells remarkably like revolution. Take a whiff, inhale, and pray your ass don't fail in this game called chess that's really the metaphor for life. So knight to bishop 7, checkmate, I got you beat. So there are things that are very much still the same that have not changed. And yet, you know, there are things that really have transformed in whatever way they have. And some things I just, you know, feel like I continually see. So this one is called Hate We. Why we hate we? Why we content to be colonized, subdued with lies laced with paychecks? Why are we so hell bent on getting and instead paying our debts, we pray for lotto luck? Why we don't buy houses on our block? Shout to the police, yo, the cops who got our shit on lock and ain't even pulled no Glock, just glared, stared so hard that we looked down at the ground like that shit got answers. And sometimes I wish all the motherfuckers get cancer, cause then we could start again. And this time we just might win if we shouted revolution instead of murmuring colonization. Yo, this shit they pulling is an anal assignation, cause I definitely feel the burn of their infiltration. Why we hate we? Why we don't push for education, but instead push for nasty girl videos where dudes call us hoes and we call ourselves bitches, like we part of a cacophony of witches set on destroying our essence. Yo, this shit is intense, because I feel the presence of my ancestors breathing at my back, and I definitely sense their anger at the lack of lashback we've been given to those that marked us over cotton in the Confederacy. So dastardly was the plot that they didn't even have to fire shots in some spots. Just showed us beads and shiny things and stole our plot, lock, stock, and crack a barrel. Like looking down the chamber of our demise. Now where were the wise men then when John Standish and them came with their talk of Christianity? I guess they was in the back of the teepee smoking peyote, getting sleepy when them dudes came with smallpox packed in boxes inside blankets, telling us we should be thankful. Because they saved us? Nah. So on Thanksgiving, we slice up turkeys the way they sliced our backs with lashes. And we pass cranberry sauce the way they passed our bodies around from slave master to slave master. Never masking their hate for us. Now tell me, why we hate we? I used to work for an organization where we did a lot of work in Brooklyn. It was like one of my first jobs moving back to New York. And a lot of the work was, you know, around working in underserved communities, black and brown young people. And I remember the experience I felt when my then executive director had asked me to go to a specific school and speak with the administrators or the principal. And it's, and I don't remember the moment it dawned on me, but I remember the experience I felt of being used for my blackness. Like I was being asked to go before somebody else. Like they couldn't speak on the behalf of the agency, that I needed to do that. And, you know, it always reminded me, like, wow, that's how that looked. But more importantly, it also had a very real connotation to me of Charlie Brown. And I love the Peanuts gang. And one of the things I always used to love is the whole thing about, you know, Charlie Brown would always try to kick the football, Lucy would always pull it away. And, you know, and I always thought to myself, just one time, I wanted Charlie Brown to be like, Lucy, if you move that ball one more time, I'll punch you in your goddamn face. So, you know, so this was kind of like my ode to Charlie Brown, so to speak, right? Yeah, that, I think that's the most of it, you know. And people are who they are, and it's always in their actions. You know, people could say whatever words they say to you, because Lucy would always say, no, Chuck, I won't pull it again. No, Chuck, I won't pull the ball away again, and she would always do it. And so at some point, Charlie Brown never learned, like, oh, I keep believing her words, but her actions are really what speak the loudest, and I should stop trying to, you know, deal with her in that way. In any case, I am constantly bombarded by these pagan parasites that seek to pimp me for information. They want to exploit my blackness, mostly because they're tactless, but mainly because they lack the knack and luster to shine. It must be the lack of melanin I'm smelling in them that makes me pause and clench my nose against the foul odors that erodes their soul. They want me to come to their job and shine like a new dime, or do the shucking job that makes them five but only nets me $1.29. Like that's supposed to make me smile like a nigga with a watermelon or a ripe new yam in my hand. Damn that, man. My path is clear. For not only is it without fear, it's laced with faith. So solid is this weight that it makes it possible for me to shake melancholy from my mind, because it attempts to load me down like bricks. And I eradicate guilt from my psyche, because you always trying to use that master-slave complex to psych me out. Besides, it's a wasted emotion that tries to strike at me like swift kicks to the ass, making it hard for me to pass the impasse that they lay before me. Like any roadblock you stock could hold me. You must have fell and bumped your head, thinking you could stop my tread by whispering catty verbiage behind my back, like that was gonna make me retreat to the back of the bus with the colored seats. I'm far from meek, and my shit ain't weak. Matter of fact, I always land on my feet, and you hate that. Matter of fact, you scratch your head and stand perplexed, looking vexed, because you can't break me down today. And it's not for lack of effort on your part. It's just that, like all African warriors, I got true heart. And that makes it just a wee bit hard for you to knock down my guard. But you'll try again, because the idea that I might win, that I walk and smile, eats at your soul like acidic bile. So all the while I lay back cool, knowing that I got you fooled. You thought you had me pimped, honey, I had you tricked. Got you calling me Miss Speaks, cause I'm that title chick. And you frown, Charlie Brown, cause I'm like Lucy with the ball in the yard telling you, try again, Chuck. So you shrug your shoulders and you say, well, what the fuck? And you run hell bent toward me, ready to vent. Fast as your approach, as venomous hate words fill your throat. But I pull the ball away, and you fall down. And all I say is, try again, Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown, try again. There isn't much that's changed about politics in regards to black people in America. Like, really, there isn't much that's changed. There's, you know, as far as I can see, having studied, you know, African American history and history overall, there isn't much that's changed. You know, nuances, there are nuances that give the illusion of freedom or equality, but not really. And and it's always the same, no matter, to me, right? Let me be responsible for saying, to me, on whatever level of government, it always has looked the same. There's always something that, you know, whether it's been things like redlining or, you know, underhanded practices for house buying, or, you know, even down to, you know, opening a bank account, like, or what neighborhood you live in. There's always something underhanded on every level. And again, be responsible. That's my perception of it. Maybe others have something different, but I see what I see. Right. And so for me, it's always like there's something in politics that doesn't, you know, ever get addressed. And it's also one of those, you know, structures, right? Those infrastructures that really has to be dismantled. Whether you talk about dismantling education or financial institutions or education, all of those are infrastructures that are so firmly put in place that it also continually allows to keep those who have been continually disenfranchised to stay that way, to keep marginalized communities marginalized, to keep people who don't have continuing not to have. And so this is like my love letter. It's called A Love Letter for the Soulless, a requiem for politics, you might say. Dear President, Governor, Senator, Congressman, blah, 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 blah. Your soul is rancid, leaving a stench so foul it's like pus leaking from your spirit, similar to that of battery acid, leaving a trail of scars like the trail of tears, leaving wounds so deep it's like lean, hungry ears. And I fear that I may have become infected, that some dormant hate has been resurrected, like a phoenix from the ashes or the titans that clash with the masses of lives that you have laid waste to and left flabbergasted. Perhaps I am hasty in my lambasting, so I pause to give you time to come up with a lie or a line that falls trippingly from your lips like grapes from the vine or apples from the tree, like the ones that tempted Eve. Now, that could be a myth, but what's true is that you had me fooled, doling out compliments like dealers dole out crack, compounding lies upon lies like bills that get stacked. Because not only do you lack the knack to knock the block off this rock star, you ain't even rock hard. You soft in mind and spirit. You can't even take a hit. Matter of fact, I'll say it, you shit. And if all it took was my spit to put the flame out on those disasters you caused, I'd let the bitch burn if it meant your soul would be found. But it can't, because your soul is rancid. It's like cancer's your answer. That soul-eating virus that eats at the iris of your third eye, making it impossible for you to distinguish truth from lies, to give solace to those who are desperate in plight, for those unable to stand against you and fight. In any case, warmest regards. best wishes, me. I had a dream once, and I remember the dream. So one of the things to say is that my great grandmother was a really heavy influence in my life, and everybody who knows me, I talk about my great grandmother all the time. I don't think her name was Ethel Speaks Jenkins, and I don't think there was ever a day that I don't think there is ever a day that I don't talk about my great grandmother and her heavy influence on my life. And I was very fortunate that I had my great grandmother well into my 30s, and she's been gone a number of years now. But, you know, when I think about her, it's always in the sense of reverence, like all of who I am and you know, the way I've grown up and all of that. It's like huge for me. I lived in my house with my grandmother, and like, it's, in essence, if I really be very candid, she was my best friend. So I had a dream. It was so long ago. I can't really remember all of the dream, but the biggest part of it was that I was like in the middle of like some kind of revolution, and, you know, and I remember waking up, and it probably was based on this book I had read many years ago called Parable of the Sower, and the second part, Parable of the Talents, by this black science fiction writer named Octavia Butler. And it always kind of put me in mind of like what would happen if the kind of like the zombie apocalypse, that kind of thing, right? But really, like, you know, any kind of, I don't want to say apocalypse, but any kind of revolution where things were about to happen. And essentially, you know, that also sparked for me to create a go bag. Like, I have a red go bag in my closet, not ashamed. It's got all kinds of goods and supplies for me to hit the road, survive and make it, and, you know, do those kinds of things. Don't know if I'll ever need it, but it's always good to be prepared. Essentially, that just made me think about, you know, what it would look like to be on what I might call a revolutionary run. So I've been on a revolutionary run. From the start at daybreak to the setting of the evening sun, I met up with Sojourner on the train, caught up with Martin on the bus, saw Malcolm down at the Audubon, and I asked him, yo, why they messing with us? His answer, because they can, did not satisfy my mind, nor did it abate my anger. Instead, it puts me close to the edge of danger, makes me want to turn over tables, destroy these lies of happily ever after fables, kick over chairs, makes me understand how tempers can flare when the unjust in the world gets largely ignored and the folks that ain't got get the shaft. And those that do got get to in the faces of authority and this atrocious ass poverty and act like they ain't got nothing to do with this disparity. I've been on a revolutionary run, seeing too much at the setting of many evening suns, and through my grandmother's eyes had me ready to tote my gun. Makes me wanna holler and throw up both my hands like Marvin. When brothers get shot like they ain't and the world don't seem to care one bit that my melanin is getting extorted, bombarded, compartmentalized like an old car in a crusher. Now, which one of these motherfuckers I got to shoot for the world to kneel down and kiss my boot? I've been on a revolutionary run, packed my bags and hit the road like Octavia told me to do in the parables. And I have devised and looked at all of the variables in order to ignite the revolution. I looked at the antics behind pollution, thought about waging wars against liquor stores, even contemplated shouting from rooftops. Too afraid that I'd get shot, so instead I decided to educate. I figured that'd be one way for me to eradicate some of this hate. I'm hoping that I make my mark. So I'm going to start some of my babies in Ocean Hill, bring transformation to Bed-Stuy, swing on down to Crown Heights, see all my communities take flight. That's how I'm sparking the revolution. So I come from a traditionally Southern household. I was raised by my great-grandmother and my mama, and what was fortunate for me was having my great grandmother present all the time. But one of those things that also happened is that I come, you know, from that household is, you know, we come from a hard working family like that. You know, we work hard in my family. And so going to college was a really big deal because I was the first. And, you know, and I spent many years in education as a student. Then I've been a teacher. Then I've spent, you know, I spent more than the majority of my adult life working in education systems, whether it's, you know, working with after school programs, whether it's been coaching, training administrators, whether it's been, you know, working directly or indirectly with students. But, you know, I spent a lot of years in education, and it really, you know, I had to start looking at what it has or hasn't gotten me in life, right? Me and others in life. So I wrote this. Education, necessity or hindrance? I am constantly amazed as I sit in classes and watch those that are dazed with blazed looks upon their faces, why they didn't see it coming. Didn't they know they were getting snowed and bamboozled by these upper echelon losers that take their tuition and fees for whack-ass degrees that are worth less than the paper they printed on or the greenbacks protected by the Pentagon? They so far gone, they think that 8 by 10 inch of magna cum laude gonna make them master and commander of a life they can't master. Cause master ain't never gonna give up his house so that they can express on how smart and sophisticated your talented 10th W.E.B. Du Bois done made you. Who you think you? No inherited properties for you. That paper that you chasing got your heart straight racing because you think if you get it, you get paid. But all you get is waylaid by student loan debt and fucked up credit for all the credits you fucked up. Independent study don't net you big money and dissertations don't pay for dick. Instead, take your pick. Hone that entrepreneurial spirit. But you won't because you're scared of what you don't know. So you'll be a corporate hoe bending over for 401ks and Roth IRAs and $1,000 bonuses at Christmas and Kwanzaa. A veritable bitch-ass bonanza. Say what? Say what? As you lie and grin and pray every day that this ain't the day you get slipped the pink slip. Or that your ass don't trip over that mound of brown that hangs from the tip of your nose as you suck up to stuck-up snobs that always robs you of your dignity. And you don't even recognize how well they got you sized. Square pegs for square holes. Welcome to McDonald's. May I take your order? I feel like a lot of the conversations that we've had, that I've had growing up, are not even my conversations. They're inherited ones. Inherited ones, like I just told you before, like we work hard. Who said that? Or that, you know, we should just be happy with what we got. There were conversations that we, all of us, you know, black, brown, well, all of us, there are conversations that we inherit that aren't even yours. And my great grandmother, I mentioned her a lot. Her name was Ethel Speaks Jenkins. And why I mention her so much is because she was, still is, my best friend. And, you know, my grandmother used to have a phrase, and she used to say, ain't nothing new under the sun. Everything you doing now, I already did. And I really got that as I became older, including this thing called being a woman. I was born into this woman's body, dark of skin, full of figure, not a nigga, a Nubian, nubile, worthwhile. Somehow exiled, relegated to syrup bottles and mummified mammies on plantation scenes like Butterfly McQueen. But didn't you see? Aunt Jemima got a makeover just like the ones they do on ABC, and that is extreme. They replaced her scarf with a perm and put pearls in her ears and even lightened her skin and gave her a few shots of Botox so we forget how long she'd been on that box. I was born into this woman's body, somehow reduced to video hoes who shake their wares for 10-second solo spots on the latest video they label hot. Spending all that hard hoard cash for Louis Vuittons and Louis Vuitton, Manolos and Merlot, all the while pushing strollers onto way too crowded buses. No bigger plans than to make sure they get down to the 40-40 club in case Jay-Z arrives. He just might leave Beyonce for you. At least that's what you tell yourself as you stagger around in too tight Jimmy Choo's. I was born into this woman's body. At 14, believing that men ain't sh-. Now, who told her that? That's too young to have lost faith. Perhaps the absentee father seems furthest from her mind and dreams of him returning, turn to turning tricks for the possibility of glimpsing him in the faces of John's. Sad, but true. I was born into this woman's body, dark of skin, full of figure, not a nigger, a Nubian, nubile, worthwhile, making my mark without bending my knees or breaking my back, out to reach the glass ceiling that's really made of concrete, trying to walk the tightrope and land on my feet, just trying to live, just trying to make it, just trying to, just trying. So it's interesting. Here we are in, it's June. Really, it's, you know, we're coming to the end of June. And so much has happened over the last several months. And I used to always say, you know, I mean, not I, like, it's not like I came up with it. But, you know, there's always been that phrase. I remember that the revolution will not be televised. And I believe, and yeah, here we are, right? So it's called Television Simulcast. The revolution will not be televised. I repeat, the revolution will not be televised. Because when the apocalypse comes, Anderson Cooper will not be informing you on CNN. And the emergency broadcast system won't sound the beep. Locking your doors, stocking your shelves will not stop the revolution from sweeping you up in its midst. Driving out of town to the furthest northwest corner of the globe will not keep you out of the path of the revolution. The solution, you see, is stand fast. Guard your post. Because when the revolution comes, won't be no need for some high society host. Matter of fact, a lot of jobs gonna be gone. Who needs a fashion coordinator on the front lines? If the truth be told, the only thing that will be fashionable during the revolution is intellect. Du Bois' talented 10th might reemerge as a superpower in the midnight hour. When the revolution comes, won't be no rioting in the streets, won't be no chaos or disorder or even civil unrest. Revolution gonna come like a thief in the night, through darkness, through mist. You won't even know it's there till it's at your throat with its knife ready to strike. The revolution will not be televised. Won't be no trumpet sounding, no yells of charge. See, revolution ain't gonna draft you like Uncle Sam. Revolution just gonna plant the seed in your head and then stand back and theorize the results. Will your courage override your fear and grow you into a soldier? Or will your feet supersede your courage and stomp out your innate need for freedom? Because see, the revolution will not be televised. I am coming to the last of this set. And, you know, one of the things is that I always think about is, as a woman, just, you know, the things that I've had to say. But really, it really talk about I wrote this piece called The Don't Disrespect My Shit Act. And it's like hashtag me too, right? And at the time I wrote it, it was like, you know, 2017 or something like that. And actually, I'd written it even before that. And then it had like some movement with it as we rolled into the Me Too movement. But, you know, Shirley Chisholm, who is really, this really is like my ode to Shirley Chisholm. And she once wrote something that I'll never forget, which was, you know, the emotional, sexual and psychological stereotyping of females begins when the doctor says it's a girl. The moment that that gets said, there is something that shows up in the world, how women get interacted with, how we get engaged with, how we get dealt with, how we are encountered, what we confront, what we deal with. All that happens the minute that some doctor says it's a girl. So on the matter of total respect for Black women, I, Dawn Speaks, address the community on this day in this year of 2020. When a young sister enters into womanhood and begins to make her way into the world, she is very likely to experience some of the most demeaning experiences ahead of her. As she walks by a group of grown-ass men, the first statement out of their mouth is, "Damn, she got a fat ass," or "Look at them." And it seems to me that there's a calculated system of undermining taking place. Why is it okay for these men to talk to women like that? And why do we as women not feel comfortable saying, "Watch your damn mouth"? Why is it okay for brothers and others to call me all kinds of bitches and hoes, but then turn around and get upset if another of a different color calls them nigger? There is an unspoken assumption that it is okay to degrade me. that it is perfectly acceptable to market me as some type of highly sexualized being who, by the very nature of my DNA and origin, deserves to have her person disrespected. That because slavery made me the white man's victim of rape and emasculated you, that it's okay for you to degrade me too. Me too. I'm afraid not, boo. As a woman, I have been no stranger to disrespect by men. But the truth of the matter is that in the social media, Nicki Minaj, stiletto-wearing, coochie-cutting world, I have more often been disrespected against by skin like my own. It is true that we have allowed ourselves to be considered less than what we are. We have allowed outside forces to label us in ways that debase and allow for abuse. And in some cases, we have worn our womanhood not in our minds, but in the seam of our panties. But now that we are aware of the situation, we must push forward, especially for those sisters of the younger generation. It is for this reason that I wish to introduce today a proposal that has been put before the world but has been largely ignored since slavery, and that sooner or later must become a part of the law of this land. The unequivocal respect for Black women amendment, also known as the Don't Disrespect My Me Too Act of 2020. With this amendment, no longer will be subjugated to slurs against our person. Rather, we will be recognized as who we have always been. Soldiers, mothers, sisters, and daughters, free to pursue life, liberty, and revolution. Ashe. This is my final piece, and I feel like the world might have stopped in this moment, but it's a final piece because, you know, again, I've mentioned my grandmother because actually my grandmother died, I think, like a year and a half prior to this event, which is President Barack Obama becoming the first Black president. And, you know, she missed all of that. And I remember the experience I had the night that it was official that Barack Obama had won as president. And I remember crying, weeping, and it was like I was present to that. I was the fulfillment of my grandmother's dreams. I was the fulfillment of all that she had ever wished and the experience, right? And whatever else has happened after that is what has happened. But that moment is undeniable. It's unforgettable. It is the moment in history. It's the one I will share, you know, It's the one I will share, you know, I don't have children, but it's like, you know, it's just the one I will share long after, you know, that will be shared long after, not just by myself, but by others like me. I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
November 4th, 2008. More than a date in history, more like a date with destiny. A day when the impossible became possible and the improbable became probable, when it seemed all of mankind converged and merged with the same thought. When this war that would be fought could be won. When the most prophetic of nature's sons stepped forth, held up the glass of hope, took a sip of faith, and encouraged us to do the same. So we all pulled levers, being conscious and clever, and elevated our life conditions by taking action in the most prolific of ways. And that's not to say that the road ahead wasn't stacked with roadblocks or obstacles that sometimes made us pause. But because we have faith, we have a chance to pass the impasse that stands before us, to create a world for future generations that has the potential to be glorious. Never had I been so proud to be who I am. Never had freedom been so close at hand. Never had my faith been more tested or more inspired. Never has the capacity for human greatness been more desired. November 4th, 2008. I cried tears that night, and not because this man that had won was an African of the Americas, but because for the first time I could see the content of our character and the swagger of our integrity. And it seemed to me that all the possibilities that had been laid out before me from childhood to adult had been one big insult, because nothing that had been promised had been brought to bear. But on that night, I was there. And my faith was renewed, because what became true was the promise that my ancestors made. That dream that too many had attempted to squelch meant that they would no longer be slaves, that freedom would soon come, and that they'd no longer be shackled by segregation and Jim Crow, that the band of faith would not be broken because the people had spoken. It was written ages ago, lifetime upon lifetime. And it is only now, when we have become truly faithful, that our plates have become full with hope, with purpose, with faith. You can now dream. And now dream.